Hi there, and welcome to the Grief and Rebirth podcast. I'm your host, author, and trauma survivor, Irene Weinberg, here to encourage you wherever you are in your healing journey. In each episode, I chat with incredible grief and trauma specialists, healers, mediums, and celebs, as well as remarkable people who have inspiring healing stories to share. If you're looking for a podcast that's both uplifting and inspiring, you've found it. Let us help you find your joy in life. Hi, everyone. Welcome once again to Grief and Rebirth Podcast, whose mission is to educate, enlighten, and provide healing choices through interviews with grief and trauma specialists, healers, mediums, and people who have inspiring stories to share. I'm Irene Weinberg, the creator and host of Grief and Rebirth Podcast, with a loving reminder that you can see the full show notes and all Grief and Rebirth Podcast episodes on ireneweinberg.com, and make sure to follow us and like us on social at Irene S. Weinberg on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Today's feel-good interview is with Jake Samoyedny, who is known as the Compassionate Medium. Jake was recently recognized by the Times Square Press as the number one most recommended medium in the USA and voted the number one best medium in the United States for 2016 and 2017. Because of Jake's unique journey to mediumship, he has become a much sought-after speaker, and he is blessed to be on the preferred provider list for Helping Parents Heal, a national organization for parents who have children in spirit. Jake is the author of three books titled The Compassionate Medium, A Pathway to Eternity, and Gateway to the Invisible Door. I just finished reading and thoroughly enjoyed Gatekeeper of the Invisible Door. I learned much new information as the book primarily focuses on Jake's readings with children who have transitioned to the other side. Jake, it truly is my pleasure to welcome you to Grief and Rebirth Podcast. I'm eager to share your fascinating life story and spiritual insights with our listeners, especially your insights about children who have transitioned to spirit. So let's begin our interview with this question. Jake, what's it like to be born a medium? Please explain this and share with us your unique journey to mediumship.
Well, let me first say thank you, Irene, for inviting me on to your program. It's a joy for me to have a chance to reach out to other people who don't necessarily know me, or they may know of me. The difference between being a natural born medium and a trained medium, as a kid, I was the kid who always, you turn the radio on, I'll tell you what the next three songs are. The phone rings, I'll tell you who it is, I'll tell you why they're calling. I grew up very urban, so I'd walk up to a bank of elevators. I never waited. I would go right to the door that was opening, or it was just a knowing. And I assumed everybody had that. I didn't think there was anything unique or special about it until I was much older and I found out not everybody has it. So the difference, if I explained it from a reading, this will make sense to you. A trained medium, I'll give you an example by a reading I had done years ago. This is about 8 or 10 years ago. I had a young woman on the phone, and it was her father-in-law in spirit. And he was a very good communicator. And at one point he showed me the number 210. And I asked her if 210 meant anything to her. And it didn't mean anything, so she couldn't take it. And as the reading went on, and all of a sudden he showed me a watch, and I said, there has to be a watch that's significant to him, that's meaningful. And she says, well, I don't know. I don't know if my husband has. And she yelled to the other room, you know, do you have your pop's watch? And he said, no, I don't, but I think my brother does. And so he called his brother, and then I heard him yelling in the background that, you know, yeah, he has Pop's watch, but you don't want it. It's broken. It's stuck on 10 after 2.
Oh, my God. That's
a natural medium versus a trained medium. A trained medium would have gotten the idea of a watch that may have been significant, but they would never get the time off the watch. they wouldn't get that specific piece of information. That's basically the difference. The best stuff in readings for me are things that are totally unknown by my sitter. It's called validation after the fact. So you cannot get it from them psychically. It has to come from somewhere else. And that's what you really want to aim for, as much of that as you can. And, you know, because otherwise people who will be cynical will question, well, you got it from her, you picked it up from, you know, all that kind of stuff. And to be honest with you, I don't need to do that. I don't need to pick it up from you. I don't need to do any other research on you, anything like that. It's always just right there. It's as simple as that. That's the difference between, yeah, that's the difference between a trained medium and a born medium. Is there's the perfect phrasing is a Gordon Smith line of when something is a belief, there's room for doubt. When something is a knowing, there's no more room for doubt. Wow. And that's the way I work from it. It's just a knowing. It's always right there. I've never opened up and there has not been a spirit person there. I've never not been able to bring anyone through for somebody. It's never happened. I do somewhere between 550 and 800 readings a year, depending on how busy I want to be. And, you know, it's always right there. I'm probably 6,000 or 7,000 readings in at this point. And, you know, it's pretty reliable. It's pretty consistent. And that's the flaw that most people find in their mediumship, is it's very inconsistent. I'm lucky I don't find that with my mediumship. It's always right there.
You're right on the button, where a lot of some people, they'll say, well, they're 96% accurate, 85% accurate, or whatever.
There's no way to really gauge that. There's a lot of that out there now. People who are trying to prove that which is otherworldly by human standards. Good luck with that.
Yeah.
You know, not going to get there. It's going to sound pretty and it's going to sell whatever they need to sell. But it's not real.
But you also, in addition to being a natural born medium, what makes it even better is you also did train.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So I think our listeners will be very interested in that, because you've trained with some of the best mediums at the prestigious Arthur Findlay College for Psychical Studies in Stansted, England. And you're also a registered medium at Lilydale, America's oldest spiritualist community. So could you tell our listeners about why you went to the college, Arthur Findlay College, and also about Lilydale and what makes each one so special? And where is Lilydale located anyway?
So I'll start with my teachers, and then how I ended up in England, and then how I ended up in Lilydale, because that's the natural progression of it. My main teacher for 5 years, twice a week, was Janet Nohavik, out of Pompton Lakes, New Jersey.
And I know her, Jake. She's fabulous. Great. Go ahead.
There's nobody in the United States as on the same level with her when it comes to platform style mediumship. She's the standard bearer for evidential mediumship in the United States. And studying with her for 5 years, week in, week out, you know, the integrity is there. You have to work from a place of integrity. It's all about providing evidence, and not just messages without the evidence. And there's two different main styles in mediumship in general. There's the American style, which is heavy on message and less on the evidence. The British style is heavy on evidence and not always heavy on message. Mm-hmm. So what I think of is the right way to do it is to go cafeteria style. Learn from as many teachers as you can. Take what makes sense, leave what doesn't. Don't stay with one teacher too long, because you tend to become a clone. And I've heard so many mediums sound exactly like their teachers, give the same exact evidence, even sometimes have a little hitch in their speech pattern, and they even do that in it. And that's how you know they're a clone. They have not developed their own version of mediumship. And it's sad, because they, you know, they have the ability and they're not trusting the spirit world enough that, you know, everybody's afraid of looking like a fool or, you know, falling on your face. Well, a comedian has told that joke 1,000 times. A singer has sung that song 100 times. An actor learns their line. They know their part. They play the character. When a medium opens up, you have no idea what's going to come out of your mouth. You literally are flying by the seat of your pants. You have no clue, and you have to trust that it's going to be there. And they've never let me down yet. It's always there.
That's amazing. Tell us about this Arthur Findlay School College, because you hear a lot about that in England. And then I know our listeners would love to learn, what is this Lily deal?
Okay, so Arthur Findlay College, if you've ever read any of the Harry Potter books, the author, J.K. Rowling, used to take the train trip, and it would go through Stansted Montfichet, which is where Arthur Findlay College is. So she based Hogwarts in the Harry Potter series on Arthur Findlay College, except it being all about wizards, it actually is about mediums. So it's a very, very odd place. It's been there since 1964. It was bequeathed by Arthur Findlay, who was an early spiritualist in England, very much connected to Arthur Conan Doyle in that era of spirituality. It's a very unique building, and they've grown on it, and it's a beautiful old English estate. It's a gorgeous place to stay. Bizarre things happen in that building. They still have a lot of physical things happening there because the energy is completely different. You feel it when you're in there. I have seen things floating around. You know, there's just stuff that you can't explain. And literally the teachers that teach you have been some of the best that have ever been in this field. And as they age out and new teachers come in, they're just as good. So you're lucky in that way. Now, Lilydale is a spiritualist community that's been there for 142 years. It was started by a group called the Free Thinkers, and they were the ones who were behind the suffragette movement, the women's suffrage movement to get the right to vote. And they have photographs in the museum at Lilydale of Elizabeth Cady Stanton, all the different suffragettes who would come to speak there. If they were to speak in public, say in Rochester or something like that, they would get arrested. They were not allowed to meet in public and hold talks in front of groups. They would get arrested. So Lilydale is spiritualist religion, so it's considered religious property. You can talk there without getting arrested. You can hold groups there and speak in front of crowds, and you're not going to be arrested. That's how it came to be, and then it has grown over time.
That's amazing. That's so interesting. I think our feminist listeners will be very interested in that.
Well, it's about to the place where the suffragette movement started is about 2 hours away. And this was a perfect place for them to get to that was close enough. So, it was very, when you read the history of, if you go to the LilydaleAssembly.org, which is their website, you'll find everything you need to know about the place. It's about an hour south of Buffalo and about 45 minutes north of Erie, Pennsylvania. It's right on Lake Erie. It sits on Casadega Lake, which is a 20-minute ride from Lake Chautauqua, which is kind of famous in that part of the country. It's a very upscale, lakefront place for the summer. So it's a beautiful little community, and there are approximately 50 mediums that are registered there. All different degrees of abilities and skills, all different styles. And some, you may have spirit artists. They have a handful of spirit artists there who will draw loved ones and, bring through messages from them. There were, what's not allowed in Lilydale is things like tarot cards and, things that are very much about the psychic. This is more about mediumship. So it's a beautiful place. It's definitely worth a 3 or 4 day trip, or a weekend, things like that. It's worth the drive if you're looking for a place to go, or you're going to be in that part of the country. It's an interesting place to. There's a lot of workshops there. I'm teaching two next year. One is on a grief weekend. I'll be doing an afternoon workshop on that, and then another one will be a mediumship intensive to teach the style that I work on. I work under a different, unique style than most mediums. And I developed that on my own going cafeteria.
What is your style called?
I don't call it anything. I just teach the way I work.
It's the Jake style.
Well, it's funny. I was watching the Netflix show, The Kaminsky Method, and I was thinking it should be the Samoyedny Method. So, give it a name like that. It just means I've changed the dynamic of how most mediums work. If you watch fledgling mediums, they sit there like this. Give me something. And then they're waiting for the information to come in. I've taken that element out of it, and I teach people how to keep speaking so they don't drop their link and they're able to stay connected to spirit longer. And that's when you start to get better stuff, and how to mine it for more instead of just taking that first initial piece and then jump to another piece. And you're always looking for that wow factor. When you take that out of it, you find that the first piece they gave you was only an introduction. The story they really wanted to talk about was behind it. And too often the people in a reading shut it down by not knowing what to do with it. It's a triangulation of energy. You have a sitter, you have a reader, and then you have a spirit communicator. So think of a triangle. And if any one of those three parts are not working in for the highest good, the reading is going to be less than. So I try to teach people how to not do that and how to work for the highest good with the idea that you're providing an avenue for communication. It's not a conversation. We mislead you. Mediums mislead the public because we have to say things in a certain way that leads you to believe it's a conversation, but it's not. It's a form of communication. They're telling me, he's talking about, she's speaking up, they're mentioning. They're not actually doing any of that. They don't have a voice box. They cannot do that. They're imprinting a thought from their mind to my mind. I have to use my voice box to create words that my sitter can understand of what the story is they're trying to bring back, or the connection of what they're trying to bring through.
In a way, it's a very refined form of translating.
It is. What I've told people over the years is just imagine that you're creating a language that only you and the spirit world can understand. No one else will understand it. It's that personal. It's that individualistic. Unless you turn into a clone of another teacher.
Right.
And even with people that I mentor maybe 4 to 6 people a year. I don't charge them for it. If I spot somebody who's a natural medium, I'll just latch onto them and grab them, and I'll work with them for a while and make them a better medium so that they can move on and then find the next teacher who will find the next teacher and keep them going so that they become more engaged in it. With the idea, and then there's even times I felt like I work for the HR department for the spirit world. Yeah, I feel like I'm grabbing out the people when I spot them that have some real ability versus the ones who are doing it for, you know, attention-seeking behavior or look at me, look what I can, you know, look at what I can do and you can't, you know, that kind of thing. There's a lot of that out there.
Which is sad because they're really providing a service that they should be providing a service that people are often desperate for, and yeah. They make it all about them.
Yeah, it's not really about the you know, if you understand it this way, the human in the physical world is making a phone call. The person in the spirit world is answering the phone call. If the medium is doing their job right, they're nothing more than the old-fashioned phone booth. And they get out of the way and just give what's coming through. They don't add it, and you just give what you get. You get the best readings that way.
So I want to ask you also, as a natural born medium, when you worked with all these people, so you took a little bit of each of their styles or how they communicated with people. So you took a potpourri. You took the best, like there were tips of better ways to interpret information or whatever, because you already could do that.
Yeah, I have never sat and watched another medium work when I didn't have paper and pen in my hand taking notes for certain phrasings that they may say that better than I say that. Mm-hmm. That's a good transition to this piece of information. I'm always looking to improve. Even though, you know, I have a good 10 years plus in and as a full-time working medium, I'm lucky that I think I'm smart enough that I'm only about 55% of my development at this point. I'm looking forward to what will I be like in 5 years from now. I can't wait to see where this goes.
So I'm always like dynamite now. So could you imagine? Wow.
I can't wait to see what it's going to be like. I can't wait to see who is going to be the next group. You know, there's a wonderful teacher. One of the teachers I had in England, Mavis Patilla, and, I sat in a lecture of hers last year, and she was talking about that, you know, don't be concerned with who's recommending you here. Be concerned with who's recommending you in that world. If you find that you get a lot of the same type of readings over and over, that means you're being passed around in the spirit world. So most mediums, from conversations I've had with them, do a couple dozen readings a year connected to children that have died. And they talk about these readings and how it hurt them and it beat them up and they cried and all these different things. Well, I did just under 300 of those readings last year. So that's normal for me. I don't, I don't get in the way of what the kids are trying to bring through. I know how to bring the healing into the reading between a child and a parent, because that's really what my role is to take it to that level and not provide evidence. Some mediums and some of the better known mediums, they are so freaking boring to listen to. It's, oh, they're showing me pasta. I don't know why they're showing me pasta, but they're showing me a bowl of pasta. Did they like pasta? Yeah, I can't stand to listen to them because they're so boring. These are people who have died, but they're still people. Right. Their personalities are not like, oh, they're showing me pasta. That's not the way people communicate with each other. They have conversations. They talk about things that were meaningful. They talk about things that meant to each other. They talk about the stories from when they were a kid, from when you were a kid. They bring up things that are significant to their memory bank, not just to your memory bank. And when they come into that thing where they're just rolling off one piece of evidence after another, and there's no healing attached to it, it's a flat affect reading. And it's like, oh, they're wonderful because they told me this and this. Yeah, but so what? It has that so what factor. Did it help you? Did it provide any avenues for healing for you and your family? If it doesn't do that, why bother?
Right, it's a waste of money. Well, it sounds like they're not coming from a heart connection. They're just coming actually from it's almost like a test. They have to pass the test. They have to get the evidence across, and that's it. They don't understand that they're dealing with really hurting people.
And this is sad. This will make me sound a little critical, but it's part of what I'm trying to get across is, so many, especially the ones that are running workshops like crazy all over the country, and they have podcasts and they have books and they have 20 different things going on. I always look at it and I go, are you good at any one thing? Because you seem to be so spread out. Can you do one thing well? And they're always pushing a brand. They're always building their brand. So I don't know where the healing is in that. I'm not sure. I'm content to make a small living doing something I love that's living a life of service to others. That's enough. That's enough.
Listen, you're living your sole purpose. How many people can say they do that? That's wonderful. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Jake. Go ahead.
I feel blessed just to have the opportunity sometimes to meet some of the people I get to meet, and to not just here in the physical, but also in the spirit world. We're always interested in the unique stories or the unique things. You mentioned before about things coming through in other languages and stuff. I've had that happen a handful of times. It's very unique and it's very odd. Early on, I used to get a lot of downloads in showers. I don't know if there was something about the water hitting you in a certain way and your head is back in a way, but I would get like buckets of information dumped into my head. And I was taking a shower one morning, and I only had one reading scheduled for later that morning. And I heard this young man say to me, my name is Nick. He showed me the New York State Thruway. He showed me around exit 14 on the southbound side. It was rainy. It was misty. It was the middle of the night. This is where I died. I felt the idea of two impacts. And he said, write this down. And meanwhile, I'm like washing my hair. I'm like, I can't write it down.
Nick, can't you tell him in the shower?
memorize this. So I memorized what he said. And I wrote it down on a piece of paper. I stuck it in my pants later. And when I went to do the reading, I met with the guy. And I said, this is your son. And his name is Nick. He was 26 when he passes. He's shown me that it was I feel two impacts. He's on the New York State Thruway. He's by exit 14, the southbound side. He said to me, well, you're right and you're wrong. He says, it's not my son, Nick. It's my nephew, Nick. He says, but I can understand how you would get confused because we lived in a three-family house and all our doors were always open. So we all raised each other's kids.
Wow.
Okay, so that's the way he felt to me. And I went through the whole reading, and he wasn't very emotional, and I was a little surprised because it was kind of fresh. The kid was only gone a few months at that point. And towards the end, he started to get a little emotional. And at the end, I said, does this mean anything to you? And I took the paper out and I handed it to him. And what I had written down sounded something like Jom Shume Lumpner, something like that. And I was like, I don't know what the hell that means. It sounded weird even when I heard it. So he's reading and he's mouthing it over and over. He goes, you don't spell it right. And I'm laughing to myself because I don't know what the hell it is. Never mind spelling it right. He goes, you speak Albanian? I said, no. I said, what does that mean? He says, it means I am happy. And with that, he started to cry.
Oh, my God.
Got emotional. From that one reading with that man, I probably got 40 to 50 readings with Albanians in that county nonstop for like the next few months. Interestingly, with the parents of the boy who died, when I showed up, they asked me to come to their home to do a reading for them in hopes of connecting with their son. They wouldn't let me pass the end of their driveway. I had to do the reading sitting on a chair in their driveway. They wouldn't let me in their house. They were afraid I was going to open a portal or something. They had that fear, you know? So I did the reading anyway, even though it was kind of odd to sit outside like that in somebody's driveway doing a reading, but, you know, their son came through and it was good. It was good for them. I still hear from the mother once in a while. She'll reach out and ask for a reading. But again, you know, I did one with a woman, and in the reading, I kept getting it screwed up, and I kept hearing something that sounded like Ben Jiao Hao Yik, something like that. And I couldn't figure out what it was. And it was my sitter's mother. And my sitter was 8 years old when her mother died. And I said, your mother's telling me I got it backwards. I got it all scrambled up. Write this down. It's going to sound something like this. Ik Hao Van Jiao, something like that. So I had a couple more readings after her. And when I came down for the night, I was in their home doing, I think, 5 or 6 readings that night. And when I came down at the end, she had Googled it. And what it turned out was it was Dutch, which was her mother's native language. And it meant, I love you in Dutch.
Oh, my God.
So here is this woman, 45 years later, having her mother tell her, I love you. That meant the world to her, having that come through in that way. That's what I'm saying. If you become one of those trained mediums who only works off of a formula, off of a menu board, you're not going to get that kind of stuff. And that's the stuff that's life transformative.
It absolutely is. You're right. You're absolutely right. Can you tell our listeners, Jake, exactly what evidential mediumship is and how it works and how you get these messages? I mean, people need to know that our lives and the bonds of love are everlasting. Evidential mediumship provides this information. But how does it appear to you? How do you get it? How do you hear it?
I'm going to back out of your question a little bit. Just in the nature of your question is limiting to mediumship.
Okay.
I never say that I work clairvoyantly, clairsentient, clairaugustine, claircognizant. There's so many different ways. I do not want to limit how they can work. So I'm open to working to every style that's possible. Any mode of information can come through. I'm open at that. When I'm working and I'm opened up, I will allow them to work any way they want to. They very often with me do a thing called light overshadowment, where they come close enough to me where they'll use my central nervous system and I will feel what the body went through when they were in their dying process. I will know that they had a heart attack because they'll give me twinges in my heart. I will sometimes feel like I'm missing a finger because I feel like it's not there. And I find out that the finger had been cut off. Oh. You know, all these different things like that. But a lot of mediums are afraid to do that. I'm not. And they take it away immediately. I've never held on to a symptom, but I'll let them show it to me. And it's very evidential because if I say to you, this is your mother, and I know that she died of congestive heart failure because my chest right now is so full of fluid, I can't cough it out. You understand that because that's how your mother died. You know what I mean? It means something to you rather than saying, oh, I think she died in the hospital. Well, okay.
It's very generic. Right.
Well, 70% of all Americans are going to die in a hospital. We know that statistically, that's the way it works. So that's not, to me, that's not evidence, you know, or the classic is, and this is more of the American style. I have a woman on the mother's side of the house who is showing me that you were quite a handful when you were a kid, right? Yes, who is that, your grandmother? Yes, yes, that's your grandma. Well, tell me your grandmother's name. Tell me what she died from. Tell me what her husband did for a living. Did she work? Tell me stuff that's real to her. Did she have brothers and sisters? Are they with her there? Who came and got her when she died? We don't die alone, ever. There has never been a human being who has died alone. Somebody in the spirit world, and usually a group of people, come and take us. That's how we leave this world. You cannot get into that world on your own unless they come and take you. You have to know that, you know, it could be weeks before, it could be days before, it could be in a few hours that you're leaving. And now there's actually a study being done right now. And I've known this for about 10 years. And it's interesting that now somebody's actually doing a real study on it based on hospice nurses and hospice workers, that the spirit almost always leaves its body going to the left. And that's when you'll see the heads turn, the eyes open in that direction, the left hand will raise as if they're taking somebody's hand. So now they're studying it to prove that. They've been showing me that for years, that that's how they left. They were in that corner of the room watching their body shut down, and then they turn their head, and there's their mother and father, and they leave with them. Oh. Always leave connected to other people. You come into this world connected to somebody, connected to people. There's always a connection between the two worlds. You're a spirit entering a physical body, your mother. When you leave this world, you're a spirit in a physical body, leaving that physical body to connect with those spirits to go home. We live there. This is a visit. We lived, we were there before we were here. We'll be there after here. We will know the people we know. We will interact with them. It's a continuity thing. There's always, you know, if you go to basic sort of the whole thing with dark matter and I forget the terminology, the science term for it right now, but energy can never be destroyed. It can be altered. It can be changed, but it can never be destroyed. And
that's quantum physics, isn't it?
Yeah, quantum physics. And that's the idea of you always will exist in one form or another. Once you come to understand that, what we try to do, and this is a mistake on the human level, is we try to humanize that which is otherworldly. And I hear a lot of young mediums now doing this, and a lot of them are learning from one certain teacher who's teaching this thing, and it's absolutely 100% wrong. And it's a wrong thing to put out to the public, but it's getting out there more and more. It's becoming more pervasive, is that our loved ones, if I have a son who dies in this world and you have a daughter who died in this world and now they're in the spirit world, they're together, they're a couple over there. There was even one woman who claimed she went to the wedding of her child in spirit, marrying somebody from Australia in spirit. It's not real. You know, there's clairvoyancy, clairsentient, clairaugustine, clairaudient. There's all these different clairs, and there's one that's becoming far more dominant, and we have to be careful of it. It's called clairdelusional.
I like that.
A lot more of that in people than there should be.
That's great, Jake. Let me ask you this, though. But say someone is, like my husband, died next to me in a car accident. He was gone. Even though that happened, he was not laying in a bed over a long period of time, slowly dying. His parents or whoever would have shown up for him to take him over?
So let me explain it to you this way. You're assuming, basing on human version of time,
right,
that it'd be like that. There is no time there. Time doesn't exist the way we understand it. When your husband dies, and I am sorry that you lost your husband in that way, in a tragic way like that, you know, it could be 30 years until the next time you see him. That's your experience. His experience is, honey, I saw you a second ago. I'll see you in a moment. Right. There's no time for him to wait. He's not aching for you the way you're aching for him. He's not grieving you the way you're... How do you grieve somebody that you're going to see in a second? How do you miss somebody that you just left a second ago? You don't even have time to miss them. So what happens is, this is one thing that's so beautiful about the spirit world. They are so loving and kind that when they know we're coming home, they always remove the spirit out of the body, even if it's a split second, even in an accident. Even
you don't feel the pain, the immediate pain or whatever, you're already out.
No, we associate the dying process with death. They are two different things. Dying is a process. Death is an event. An event can be in a split second. We put the two of them together. It's sort of like saying your brain and your mind are the same thing. Well, they're separate. They're different, but one has value over the other. One has value more than the other. It's always like that. It's the same thing in death. You will experience it, and it will be quite beautiful. You know, when they talk about, if you go back to religions, and they talk about the Bible rapture, the end of days when we all rise up, right? We have that as an individual. We will all rise up as an individual. Your spirit will leave your body. You rise, you move away. It is the most intense feeling. What they've shown me is that any sensation you've experienced in this world, take that feeling and multiply it by 100,000 times. That's what it will feel like when you die. Most beautiful experience you've ever had will feel that far intense. I'm of the belief, based on what's been shown to me repeatedly, thousands of times at this point, that they live in a state of grace. We can't quite wrap our head around that. So, you know, if you take that feeling of when you fell in love and you were basically useless to this world because you were so in love. Oh my God, you're like a dish rag. You're so. If you take that same feeling and you multiply it by 100,000 times, that's what they live in all the time. That's the feeling of that place, of the afterlife. So we have air, oxygen. That's what we understand, our atmosphere. The closest thing they have to that air, oxygen, atmosphere is that feeling I just described. I call it a state of grace because I don't think we have adequate human words to describe that place.
Right.
We've bought into that Renaissance period of what the afterlife is. It's a heaven that's unattainable beyond the skies. You know, that kind of thing where you know, it's not real. The same thing is, there's three things, and this may annoy some of your readers, but I mean some of your listeners, but there's three things I've yet to see in a reading ever. I've never seen anything political, I've never seen anything materialistic, and I've never seen anything religious. I've yet to see any of those in it. Does it mean they don't exist in that world? Of course not. They're there, but they may not have the role that we've given them here. Right. They may be different. You know, the joke I make is that I think, you know, Jesus, Buddha, Muhammad, they're sitting there and they're like, I was a carpenter. I don't know how they made a religion out of me. You know, I wasn't supposed to be a religion. I was a teacher. What are they doing? I think we've humanized something that was never meant to be humanized.
I agree with you. I so agree with you. Jake, we're going to take a quick break to allow a minute for our sponsors who keep this podcast free for our listeners. We'll be right back. We're back. Thank you so much for tuning in to my insights-filled interview with Jake Samoyedny. Let's continue on with this question. Jake, how do children in spirit, especially very young children, provide meaningful evidence to their families to provide proof of survival? And do these young children grow up on the other side or remain the children they were when they died?
Well, I can explain it in multiple ways. If somebody is a newborn or if they were pre-verbal in this world, they're more likely to show up with a grandmother or an aunt or somebody like that who's holding them to show me that they have a child with them. Sometimes that's enough for the parent to hear, is that my grandmother is holding my baby, that my aunt, who is my second mom, has my child. It's mind-to-mind communication, so they don't need words. You know, they may show me. I had one with a little boy who showed me some, I forget what it was exactly, but it was a very specific type of stuffed animal. And that was the stuffed animal that they ended up burying him with. And I didn't know this. It meant something to that little boy. But he was not verbal. He couldn't say, well, this is, you know, he didn't give me the name of it or anything because he couldn't. He wasn't capable, but he showed it to me and I was able to describe it to the father. And, you know, it meant everything to him. I'll, as far as them growing up on the other side, I'll give you by, I had somebody close to me who died at the age of 25. And he chose to leave this world, and he was somewhere on the the Asperger scale, and he was not very good with social relationships and struggled in that aspect of his life. And his name was Jerry. And at one point, he showed me a scene where he and thousands of other spirits were sitting on this hillside watching the night sky. And it was like they were watching meteor showers and all these shooting stars. And it was quite beautiful. And at a certain, I was like, what are you doing? I was having a conversation. What are you doing? And he showed me, he said, this is something I like to do. I was like, okay. And then he leaned back. And when he leaned back, I saw there was a girl sitting next to him. And I was like, oh, is that your girlfriend? He says, not in the way that you think. But she, I said, well, what's the purpose of that? How do I understand it? He goes, she's helping me. I said, okay, I understood that. So I watched the scene with him for a little bit. Then he leaned back again and she turned towards me. And I started to speak with her. And I said, what's your name? Where did you live when you were here? How did you die? And I don't remember her name. I lost it. I had it in an old computer. I wrote it up and I had it, but that computer crashed and I lost it. But she showed me that she died of stomach cancer. And she was from Kalamazoo, Michigan. Mm-hmm. And to me, she appeared to be about his age, 24, 25. And, it was very interesting interacting with somebody different than him in that scene. It was nice to have two at one time like that. And when it was all over, it got the best of me. I took her name. I took Kalamazoo, Michigan. I typed it into the computer. And up pops an obituary for her. And it was her name. It didn't say stomach cancer. It said after a long battle of with cancer. Mm-hmm. She was a resident of Kalamazoo, Michigan. Jerry had died in 2009. In her obituary, she died in 1964.
Wow.
And here she presented herself as a peer to him, a contemporary. She was, only 9 years younger than me. So she was more than middle age. Yet she showed me. And that's how she was helping. I think what he meant by she's helping me is she was sort of helping him by being a little bit of a girlfriend to him. So he came to understand how to act in those relationships. We come, that state of grace that I described to you before is a place where it's unconditional love to the degree that we can't wrap our heads around. Our brains are not evolved enough to really understand that. We can't comprehend it. So you don't come here to learn unconditional love, because that's the state you live in. You learn all of the other types of relationships, romantic relationships, familial relationships, siblings, parental, love, animal, nature, music, art, all of the other different types of love that we experience in this world. That's why we're here. Because if you're honest with yourself, those are the things that knock you to your knees in this world. Things are those relationships to love. That's the stuff why it's so hard to be here. You don't come here to learn unconditional love. You already have that.
But I think you learn not only about how to get along with people and relationships and how to work things through, but you also, if you are doing your work, learn how to avoid relationships that are toxic to you out of self-love and all of that kind of thing. Would you agree?
You hope so. We've all been in toxic relationships. We've all experienced that. It's a necessary thing. If that's one of your lessons, you have to go through it. You have to get knocked down a little bit in this world to get back up. Otherwise, why be here? Why? It is still considered to be a privilege to come into this world for a spirit. There are far more spirits than there are human bodies on this planet. That's why I believe that our population is still growing. It keeps growing. Spirits want this opportunity. They need a chance to come here. When you come through here and you go through the earthly thing, you're much further down the line when you go back home.
Oh, so this experience helps you evolve more. Yeah.
This is art school. This is a tough place. You've known very few people in this world who've had an easy life, who have not been traumatized or had some sort of tragic events happen in their life. I can't think of one off the top of my hand who's had it that easy. This is a tough place. We don't know why, but it just is.
I mean, some of the experiences you say, why would they sign up for that? I mean, there's some of the experiences so awful.
Hang into the idea of predestination and that you know that you've signed a soul contract. Not everybody buys the soul contract theory. So there are some people who, it's like Wordsworth, the writer. He called it the sleepening and the awakening, but we have it backwards. When we are born, we actually go to sleep, so we don't remember where we came from and what we've agreed to. When we die, we reawaken to that which we know where we came from. We think it's the other way. It's that, you know, you die, R.I.P., rest in peace. The biggest joke in the spirit world is, where's that rest in peace? I'm active. I'm busy. I'm constant. Looking for the door. Where do I go on this vacation that you're talking about? That seems to be a humanizing version of death.
That sounds great for me. It's perfect for me. I'll be very busy over there. I even put in a request for a party when I get there. Hey, why not?
Well, you know what they've shown me is that we create, we manifest, and sometimes they'll come back and say to their loved one, I want them to learn how to do this. We create, we manifest that which we see in the moment of our death. So they're always saying, pick a good one, pick something pretty, if that's what you want. If you're like Disney and you need the garden with the animals running around your feet, the bluebirds flying around your head, you got that. If you need Jesus on the golden throne at St. Peter at the pearly gates, that's what you're going to see. Lean into it. It's a mist. You're going to go right through it, and you're going to be where everybody else is. There's one place after here. We don't know what's after that, because even the best mediums can only lift the veil slightly and see just a hint of what is right after this.
But our loved ones are all around us. It's not that they're going to some heavenly place. It's all right around us. It's just a different perception.
We have five senses that we understand, and we're developing on the whole. Humanity is developing a sixth sense. We're in the process of that. It may take thousands of years for that to happen. So I believe our loved ones may be just outside of our senses, 7, 8, 9. You know, when you look at the out of the corner of your eye and you see something black go past your doorway in your bedroom, that can be them. That's how close they can be. Mm-hmm. We've all experienced that. You know, there may have been a time when we only had four senses, and it took, you know, 50,000 years or whatever for us to develop that fifth sense. You know, we don't know how that works.
Well, you're at the forefront then in the way people are evolving. Someone like you who has this ability, you're already in the forefront of that.
Well,
that sixth sense.
Well, there's people, and I would assume that you're part of this group. There's people who are called the sensitives. I'm a part of that group. You know, not only are they here to learn their own lessons and to be a part of other people's lessons, but they're also meant to move all of humanity forward a little bit. It's a little nudge over good over evil, light over dark. They're the ones who have that double-edged sword thing going on. They feel things differently. You know, if you're a sensitive and the average person, let's say, I'll make a number, has 9 million nerve endings in its body, a sensitive may have 10 million nerve endings. That's why they love deeper, they get hurt deeper, it takes them forever to get over something. You know, we don't heal that easily. It's a hard process because you take things a little harder, you know, and you have to be careful of being victimized or, you know, all the different archetypes that you can fall into. So it's significant to keep moving.
That's part of the lesson.
Yeah.
As for me, that was part of the lesson. I, you know, to learn how to discern and to learn to choose my attitude and to learn to choose that certain things happening were lessons to be learned, not the end of the world. That's all part of the evolving in a different way, I think.
But there's a thing that I talk about where, you know, when you first have a major loss, like when your husband passed, especially in the way that he left, or if a child passes, and it doesn't matter how, but just the fact that they left because it's out of order for us the way we think. And, you know, we always go with the theory that, you know, everybody is around you for that first month or two. And then you'll notice a lot of people disappear out of your life. And you lose friends, you lose relatives. They can't touch your pain because your pain body is too hard. It's too dense. They don't know what to say to you. They don't know the right words. They're afraid of hurting your feelings. I equate it to, if you remember what Crisco is, the shortening.
Sure do.
That's your pain body, very dense. Now picture your husband as this little white fluffy feather, and he's sitting on top of Crisco. He can't get through it because it's too dense. Mm-hmm. But what happens with a thing like Crisco, if you heat it up from underneath, it turns to a liquid gradually. And then eventually that feather can flow through the liquid. So the way we heat up our pain body, or create that ability is through self-love, self-care, other people pouring love on you, people treating you kinder, all these different things they can do. And then all of a sudden your pain body dissipates enough that that feather can flow through. That's why sometimes parents will say, I just don't get any signs. I don't feel him around me. I don't know when she's here. What can I do differently? Well, you can't. You have to wait. You have to allow the pain. You know, you have to take care of yourself. You have to allow others to take care of you. You know, the greatest gift we can give somebody, especially somebody who's lost a child, is say their name, tell their stories. Come up to the mom and say, you know what, I loved that time in that basketball game when he tripped and the ball went up in the air and it went through the basket. Oh my God, that was so funny. The mother's going to eat that up. You've just made her day. You're sharing a piece of her son's life. That's what they live for. You know, there's even somebody like yourself, you know, you could be, and this happens a lot with parents from conversations I have had with them. You could be online in Walmart or in a supermarket and have everything out on the little conveyor belt. And somebody will have a conversation beside you about an accident that just happened. And they start talking about the brutality of it. And you can't do it in that moment. You walk out of the store. You just leave because then you leave the stuff there with the cashier. And you can't even do it. And you have to shop later. That happens. Those are triggers. For people with children, they'll watch a movie and the scene will be the exact scene of their child's death. They can't do it. They have to walk out of the theater or a TV show.
I can understand that. I very much can understand that.
It's very hard. With helping parents heal, there's certain movies that I'll go see, and then I shoot them a message whether or not their membership should avoid this or go see it. Like when the movie The Shack came out, or Collateral Damage, I think it was called, or Collateral Death, whatever it was, with Will Smith. You know, all of these movies needed to be seen so that these parents don't walk in and get hurt again. You know, you got to keep them from that. It's hard.
It's very hard. Very hard. Let me ask you something. With you, what you do, do you ever get skeptics who really challenge you, Jake?
All the time. I'm the most honest medium. You know, about only once in the last 2 years have I had to stop a reading because the sitter was just either not being appropriate or they were being very difficult. Usually it's a skeptic, or usually the one that I'm thinking of right now, and it happened to have been a mom. And I did not have a good connection with her daughter. I knew she had a daughter in spirit. I told her that. I think I even gave her daughter's name or something, but I didn't have a clear connection. I only had sort of a 20% connection. It wasn't enough. I couldn't get any information that was valuable. I could give generic stuff, you know, but it's not going to be me. So I said to her, I don't have your daughter in the way that I'd like. I need for you to talk about your daughter. And that will help her to come closer. She'll decide that she hears your voice. She's going to tune in. She's going to get a little close to me. Well, I'm not doing that. That's your job. I said, well, you're not hearing me. I'm telling you, I don't have your daughter. I feel her near me, but I don't have her in a way that I know I can have her to get you a better reading. Well, I'm not going to. I said, talk about the way she dies. No, that's your job. You're supposed to do that. So I finally, after she did that a few times, I said, I'm just going to stop. I'm sorry. I'm going to hit the refund button on PayPal. Send you back your money immediately, but I can't work this way. I don't have her. I don't want to give you a less than, you know, credible mediumship reading. So I'm not the right reader for you. You know, there's a couple of people I would recommend if you try them and maybe you'll have better luck. So of course she badmouthed me, you know, for a week or so I'm not on any of the Helping Parents Heal sites because I don't want to know any information about the parents or their kids or anything. So if they ever add me to a group, I always remove myself immediately. And she badmouthed me there. And then people defended me and said, well, what happened? And they said, well, you were blocking the reading. He was trying to tell you he didn't have it. He could agree. A lot of times if they're not strong enough on their end or the connection is not good, or in this case, the mother's own skepticism was blocking the daughter from coming close enough to me so that, eventually she came to understand that she blew it. She had a chance. All she had to do would start to tell stories about her daughter. Her daughter would have tuned into her voice, gotten more comfortable, and slid right into the reading. They don't come in the first, you know, they are not always the first person to come through. Sometimes your mom will come through. Sometimes a cousin will come, somebody else will come through first, and then they'll bring them with them. In this case, she wanted nothing to do with anybody else except her daughter. So she tried to control the reading. One thing I know about the spirit world is they will never let a human control that process ever.
Isn't that interesting? And maybe also I'm thinking that perhaps this kid was a little shy in her lifetime and her personality transferred over, and she was still a little shy. She needed a little bit of encouragement to come through.
Well, and well, if her mother was like that with me, I would imagine her mother was like that with her daughter.
Maybe she was intimidated still.
She might have been a little difficult. I when I was done and I sent her back her money, I actually said a little prayer that I hope she, you know, her daughter finds a way to get to her in a way that her mother can do it. Because I felt bad. It bothered me for days. You know, that's the sensitivity part again. You know, it bothered me more than it may have bothered her. And I didn't care that she was going to badmouth me. And that's going to come with the territory. You can't please everybody. You know, when you do this, you lose people in your life. I have friends I've lost. I have relatives who have cut me out.
Because they think you're crazy?
Well, partly that. And also it goes against the religions and all that stuff. And it's, you know, it's not what they believe. It's not their belief system. So you're, you know, and they, the main one, and this is true, is they know you in a certain way. And you've grown into something different. You've reinvented yourself, and they can't accept the reinvention of you. They still have you locked into that other place. So
they can't accept you for who you are.
Not now. They can accept you for who you used to be.
Mm-hmm. I've experienced that also.
Yeah, but if you look back at your life, for me, and again, I only do one thing. I only do mediumship. I don't do anything else. So I don't claim to be a healer. I don't claim to, all of those things are there. I can do all that stuff, but I don't put that out there. If you look at my business card, it says I do one thing. And that's because I want to do laser rather than buckshot. Because the ones with laser tend to get better readings. They, you know, when somebody has Reiki on their card and they're also doing, you know, Qigong and all, they list 20 different things. Again, I don't trust them because I don't know if they've spent any time, you know, really working hard at one thing. And I'm a little reluctant to work with them at that point.
Well, that's such an interesting take on it. Let me ask you, Jake, you share in the book, Gatekeeper of the Invisible Door, you share stories of parents and their children who have passed from the physical world into spirit. Can you please tell us about the incredible bond of love and share your story related to a little girl named Olivia?
Yeah, Olivia. This was, I was finished for the day, and I was putting my clothes sign outside of my reading room, and this couple walked past me. And the woman stopped and she goes, "Can you give us a reading?" And I said, well, I was closing up. You know, I already had done, I think, 6 readings that day. And I was closing up. And I said, besides, I only do individual readings unless it's for a couple who has a child in spirit. That's the only time I do more than one person at a time. And she looked at him and she said, well, that's us. That fits us. And I just knew in that moment, I said, okay, let's do it. So I brought them inside. Immediately, there was a daughter. She showed me this accident. I knew that she was ejected from the car, and you know, it took a while for them to find her. When they found her, she didn't have a mark on her, but she was gone. And all of that turned out to be true. I said, your daughter's giving me a name like, I don't know if I have this right. I said, it's like, Lindsay, Lindy, something like that. Livy, and she says, Olivia. My daughter's name is Olivia. I said, okay, all right. So that's close. That's as close as I could get. I've never met an Olivia. I've known Olivia, but never Olivia. So it was very cute. And I could see the kid's face. To be honest with you, I could see her face. I don't always see their faces, but in this case, I did see the kid's face. She was a little cutie pie with dark hair. She was about 8 or 9 years old when she passed. So the reading went really well, and what really impacted me was they didn't let go of each other through the whole reading. They were holding each other tight, and the father was crying, the mother was crying, the father, it was like they were in tandem with each other. And it turned out later on, I found out afterwards, that they had been divorced. They were not even married anymore, yet they were here supporting each other for this thing. And then when the reading was over and we were talking, they had told me that they had been to a couple of mediums, and one was very nice and tried, but didn't really, she got some lovely stuff, but nothing really evidential about their daughter. But she was a sweet lady. And then they had come from another sitting where they had, and basically the medium had told them in their words, I'm sure the medium wouldn't say it this way because I know the person and she would never phrase it this way, but their interpretation of it was, you have a lot of nerve trying to connect to your daughter. She's in the hospital in the spirit world.
Oh my goodness.
She will not be available to you for at least 6 months or a year. And it's, when I heard that, my head exploded, because how can you deny access to a parent of their child? They're, when you die, they are immediately available. A second later, they can come through in a reading. That's how quickly it happens. So they're never not available to us. I've had them come through literally hours after they died, and they're right there, and it's evidential, and they give you information. So as we were chatting, the mother said to me, you know what was interesting is that after about 20 minutes before the accident, what it was is they had been hit by a drunk driver at 103 miles an hour. Child who was in the back seat of this SUV, because of the impact, she was thrown out of the back window, flying out of the car that way, and they found her 40 feet away. And again, not marked up, wasn't a scratch on her, but she was gone. She had left her.
The impact.
And she said, you know, about 20 minutes before the accident, Olivia said to me, "Mommy, there's an angel in the car." And I thought that was beautiful, and then it hit me in a different way. And I said, "You got to come with me." And I took them outside and I took them to my car and I opened up the trunk of my car. The night before, the person that I rented my reading room from had given me a 2-foot angel statue. And I said, "This is for you. This is not for me. This is an angel in the car." I gave them the statue because it belonged to them. It didn't belong to me. And it just meant the world, you know, to them. And they've been very connected to me. Now, here's the really positive. There's always, you know, in natural law, there's always good, and, you know, when there's a negative, there's always a positive. That woman, who is in her early 40s, a week ago, had a brand new baby girl, and she's given it a name similar to Olivia, Aviana, I think the name of the new baby is, and I've seen pictures on Facebook now of this new baby, and this family is, she's so happy, of course. Olivia is still a very significant part of her life, and there's still a lot of pictures of her there. But they have a new thing. It's a different father. The other father had remarried. He has different family and all that. So they're both getting on with their lives in a way.
Interesting. Is it true that sometimes, like, Olivia could come through as a soul into her sister's body?
Absolutely not. Impossible.
No, it's impossible. Like, you hear that sometimes.
Like one spirit hijacking another body. It's not done. That's again, that's us wanting to romanticize something. You know, this new baby is your grandfather's spirit come into him. That grandfather still exists. That spirit still exists. He's not of this world anymore. He's moved on to the next thing.
Well, no, I meant that since Olivia was on the other side, might she have?
Yeah, probably the only connection is through the parents. They may have been connected over there beforehand. Who knows? But they're two separate spirits.
Okay. And you talked about there was a 9/11 reading you'd like to share with our listeners.
Yeah, I did. Another medium I know had a cousin who lost her husband and I didn't know this up front. She says, I have somebody I need for you to read. And I said, okay. And I made an appointment with one. She came to my office at that time. I live just outside New York City normally. And I had an office in a town over from my, where I live. And I went through the reading with her and I knew, you know, I picked up her husband very easily. And I knew that he was a police officer. He wore a uniform like that. And then all of a sudden I saw the World Trade Centers and the whole thing. And I was like, oh, okay, all right. So then I connected him to he died on 9/11. And her affect was flat through the whole reading. I spent a good hour and a half with this woman. And no emotion, no reaction. It's 10 years after. All this stuff is fine. And then I said to her at a certain point, I know this expression. I don't know why your husband is telling this to me, but I'm going to say it anyway. And I don't edit, so I give everything I get. I never edit anything. And I said, your husband wants me to say to you that he's like a pig in shit. Do you understand that? That's when she lost it. Because as he was off duty, he had just gotten off his shift. and he was getting ready to head home. He lived about an hour north of Manhattan. And he, what happened, they got the calls and everybody, you know, was all on deck, all hands on deck. And he hopped in, he was an EMS guy, and he hopped in his truck and was shooting down towards the World Trade Center. And she was trying to, this is the days of the flip phones and everything. If you remember back, the big heavy flip phones, she was trying to talk him into turning around and coming home. You know, you have to get out of there. This is not good. You know, you're finished. You finished your shift. Come home. You know, all that's, and as he's running into the tower, he says, "Are you kidding? I'm like a pig in shit." And that's the last thing, the phone died at that point. It's the last thing she heard of him. I saw what was interesting was I saw the number 23 above him, and I couldn't understand what that was about until I said to him, "You understand the number 23?" And she said, when they found his body, when it had come down, what they believed happened was somebody who got out said that they saw her husband. He was attending to somebody who had a heart attack coming down the stairs. Mm-hmm. And they were on the 23rd floor.
Oh, and my God.
When it crashed down, he was working on this person. So he was in the midst of saving somebody else's life, and that's when he died.
Wow, does he got a special place? Whoa.
You understand evidential versus, you know what I mean, seeing the 23.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That kind of specific, that's evidential.
That's wow.
All the other stuff meant nothing to her.
Right. Let me ask you, I'm sure you have many thoughts about grieving and how we can help those we care about who are grieving. Jake, would you like to share that with our listeners who are coming into the holidays and some of them are grieving now?
Well, the perfect thing to say is about holding space for people, and just sometimes it's about listening. You know, you cannot give somebody a greater gift than just being on the other end and listening to them. You have to let them vent. You have to let them talk about whatever it is that's bothering them or whatever they need to do. You know, very often when somebody dies, the person or the people left behind feel guilty for 100 different reasons. None of them are relevant. None of them are real, but they feel it anyway because it's human. And you have to let them vent about, you know, I wish I had talked them out of that day. If only I had called a doctor when he didn't. You know, there's always all of those stories. You know, if you take in the case of your accident, if you guys had left a minute later, you know, you could do all that. You could beat yourself up for years over that kind of stuff.
Right.
It doesn't change a thing.
Right.
It's still going to be what it is. So if you can be kind to each other and especially kind to yourself, oh my God, that's a big one. You know, we're very judgmental in this world and we're very easy to judge other people. It's not hard for us to do that. If you were to take that element out of your personality when you're talking to somebody who's in grief, you'd be surprised what a gift you're giving them. Talk about their loved one. You know, it's not about saying, you know, let me know what I can do for you, especially when it's right after. Just do things. You know, say, look, I'm free Thursday night. Do you need go get a mani-pedi? Do you want to get out of the house for a little while? I can watch the dog. I can, you know, take your kids to Mickey D's, whatever. Just do something. Do something for them, concrete. That's all. And then continue to do things like that. Usually people drop off food because you drop it and you leave.
Mm-hmm.
That's not enough. That's okay. That's helpful. But the real thing is to give them that conversation. Let them vent. And don't push it. You know, don't say, you know, I know when to leave. You know, they may only be good for half an hour and that's it.
And then they
You know, they have to go cry. You know, your tears, the way I think of it is your tears in this world are literally liquid love in that world. And that's mm-hmm. what you appreciate it.
That's beautiful. I have to remember that quote. Our love is liquid tears?
No, your tears are liquid love.
Our tears
are liquid love.
Liquid love, that's beautiful. And that's so true because I've noticed like, for myself, when I cry and I think about Saul and different things that went on, my tears are more watery. They just fall down my face. That's amazing. And the other thing
imagine if he felt that when you're crying. Imagine if he felt that as love being poured on him over in that world.
Right.
Why would you deny him that? Right.
That's absolutely right. And by the way, I have to add, this is an interview with you, but I have to say that when they pulled me out of the car, after I knew that my husband was gone, and an authoritative and loving male voice came into my head and said, be loving and kind to everyone, as they put me on the side of the road. And that began my book, because if you want to have your life changed with your husband dead next to you, and you're being told, and you are not someone who gets messages like this, and you didn't even believe in it, and you're being told, be loving and kind to everyone, it changed my life, and it's continued to ripple forward and change other lives because I got that message, which is very much in keeping with what you're saying.
Yeah, we forget the rippled effect of every interaction we have in this world. That's what you're going to come to learn when you die. We sort of have this, we've made a Hollywood version of it where it's not accurate, but it's the closest way to describe it. You sort of have like a little bit of a life review when you die. And it's not punitive. It's not to make you feel bad about what you missed out on. It's nothing like that. But it's not that Hollywood thing where you see, scenes from your life. What you're shown are certain interactions of relationships. So you come to understand the closure of that, why you were mean to that girl in high school, why this guy broke your heart, all of those things that got you to that day that you leave this world. So you understand the lessons that you didn't get to learn while you were here. So when you go home, when you head back to the spirit world, you're finished. You're cooked. You know, you've learned what you were meant to learn here. Whatever you didn't get, don't worry about it. They're going to give it to you. You're going to come down and see. You're going to go, oh, okay, I got it. I should have never done that. I can't believe I broke his heart that way. Wow. That was really
And we
good.
Continue to learn when we're on the other side, which is so interesting.
The higher side of who you are, the essence of who you are, is what survives. The lower side of you are usually earthbound things, jealousy, rage, anger, bigotry, hostility, racism. All of those things are earthbound. They stay here. They don't go with us. So if your dad was like an Archie Bunker type in this world, he's not going to be like an Archie Bunker type in that world. He's going to be with people who are all diverse and all different people and understand they're no different. We're all the same.
But if he comes through with evidence, he may come back as his Archie Bunker self. Yes, so you recognize him, correct?
You will show me that so I can say that. So you know, this is your dad.
Right.
You know, I say to you that, you know, yes, your dad would be okay if you brought Meathead home, but don't even think about bringing Lionel home. You understand?
Right.
My father would have freaked out. Yes, you know.
Right.
That's the mentality of that Jim Crow era, you know, group that would all be in their 90s now. That's the way they grew up.
Right, exactly. Jake, do you have a message about the importance of healing to share with our listeners?
Healing is here's the best way to phrase it. To live an external life is an internal process. So healing comes from within. I believe that the human body is capable of healing itself in a lot of ways. We water it down a lot and we spread it too thinly, too easily. We shouldn't use it as much as we do when everybody's writing on Facebook, send healing thoughts, my family is struggling right now. That's not the way to use it. You use it in that moment when it's necessary to help that one person who's stuck in that certain place. We're at a time of healing in the world. You know, everything has to come. You know, we wonder why we have certain politicians in power all over the world right now that we're all struggling with. And part of that is for a pot to boil over, you have to take the lid off. This is the pot boiling over. This is the process of us taking the lid off. We're going to learn from this. This is a learning experience for all of the world. We're fine. We're okay. We'll get through this. They don't have as much impact as you think. We'll clean up their mess when they're done. It's not going to be a problem. We don't have to marry them or their principles or what they're like. All they are pointing out what's wrong with us, so that we have a chance to fix it. That's the way we have to look at them and not get caught up in the minutiae of what they're saying.
What's going? I kind of feel like it's squeezing a huge pimple in a way, and all the junk is coming out.
Yeah.
And it's giving us a chance to clean it up and heal it.
we are healing by nature. It's who we are. We are always taking care of each other. You know, if you think about it, you know, you've run into literally hundreds, maybe thousands of people in your life who have been very kind to you and very nice to you. You know, and that's what we do for each other, and that's what we're meant to do. I had somebody say to me yesterday, who spent a couple hours with me, And I complimented this one girl on her nails in the store. And I told this other woman I loved that she had the sweetest little voice. She was a cashier in another store. She goes, "You're flirting with all of these." I said, "I'm not flirting. I'm giving them compliments because I don't know. There could have been 10 rotten people already in their day. And I want to give them a little something of balance. I say, look how nice, you know, somebody
else." You heard the message I got. Be loving and kind to everyone. Jake, you got it too.
That's what it's about. That's what it's about.
That's what it's about. And I'm very conscious about that.
The quote that I have in my first book was, love is and always will be the answer. That's it, plain and simple. Love is and always will be the answer. In the second book, the quote that I use all the time is that, I'm trying to think of it off the top of my head. It's actually, love of others is the destination, but love of self is the journey. And the quote that I use when I sign Gatekeeper of the Invisible Door is that in the spaces between the pain is where love lives and the healing grows. Because you have to go through the pain in this world, but it doesn't mean that love can't live in those spaces in between, because that's how we get through it. And that's how we survive and keep moving on.
You're absolutely right. And we know that we can move on. Or some people don't, which is one of the reasons that there's a Grief and Rebirth podcast, to let people know that you can, and there are ways that you can heal and help your life. Or as I would say sometimes, or do you really want to keep coming back time and again with the same turkeys that you struggled with the last time? Learn your lessons and keep going. Jake, how do our listeners, I'm sure everyone wants to connect with you now. How do our listeners connect with you? And if they'd like to have a private session with you, how does that work?
Well, the easiest way is to shoot me an email. My website is compassionatemedium.com. And, email is jake@compassionatemedium.com. And my phone number is 914-227-5398. They can always reach out to me there. The younger people tend to text me for readings. Older people call or email. With me, I can't speak for other mediums, but with me, phone readings with me are exactly the same as in person. I do over 200 of them every year, and I do them all over the world. I did one not long ago in Norway, Lebanon, France, the Philippines. I've done them all over the world. It doesn't matter. You could be sitting in the room next to me. You could be sitting across from me, or you could be sitting around the world. As long as the connection is to spirit first, it will work.
Do you record the sessions for people, Jake?
I never do a reading that's not recorded, and I believe you should never get a reading that's not recorded, because you need to hear it more than once. You're not going to get everything in that moment, because we process differently than we think we do. And there's stuff layered in there. I'll give you an example. I did a reading with a lady back home a couple of years ago. And in her reading, I've made up this generic name to tell this. It was a very ethnic name at the time, and I've lost it. I couldn't remember it anymore. And I said to her, "Do you understand the name Joe Armstrong?" And she was like, "Sorry, I've never met anybody with that name." I said, "All right, remember I said it, I let it go." 2 weeks later, I got an email from her. She was a single lady traveling alone on a business trip in the Midwest. A rental car breaks down. They send a tow truck. The guy jumps out of the tow truck. On his uniform, it says Joe Armstrong.
Oh, my goodness.
So her taking the email was, that was her way of saying the spirit world was letting her know, heads up, something's going to happen. You're safe. We got your back. This is who will help you. This is his name, Joe Armstrong. All I thought was, I blew a name. She walked out saying, what the hell's he talking about? But 2 weeks later, it meant everything. I get
talk
email.
About evidence. Talk about evidence.
Yeah,
that this is real,
and that they're trying to take care of you.
Yeah,
that it hasn't even happened yet, and they're trying to take care of you.
Fantastic!
I'm never not blown away.
Wow.
I'm the biggest fan of this. I promise you that I'm sitting there sounding professional with you and looking professional, and inside I'm doing backflips because I'm like, where the hell did that come from? Oh my God! Thank you, thank you, thank you. That's what it's like on the other end of that.
Now, with Lilydale, do they get on your website also if they decide they're going to take a summer weekend and go to Lilydale, but they'd like to see you there? Do they just get on your website and sign up for Lilydale that way also?
And you can also get access to my website, through Lilydale's website. All of the mediums are listed there, and you can always reach me that way. Otherwise, you just go through, you know, compassionatemedium.com.
Okay. And so always, for people who want to know, it's L-I-L-Y, capital D-A-L-E, correct?
Yes, LilydaleAssembly.org. That's what it's called.
LilydaleAssembly.org. Mm-hmm. And tell us about your workshops on mediumship and spirituality. Why would people want to go to them? What do they learn? And do you do them in Lilydale or during the year of the location?
I do them all year round. I teach very little, very infrequently. And I'm very picky about when I teach and where I teach. So I'm teaching two classes next summer at Lilydale. That's the first time I'll be doing two there. I've only done one in the past. If I do a mediumship class, it's an intensive. And it's an explanation of the connection, how to sustain the link longer, and how to mine it for better information. And using the techniques that I work with, that I've developed over the last 10 years. And also to learn how to prep for the reading so that you get the best stuff for your sitter. The idea is to provide the best reading possible for that human that's sitting with you today. Also with the idea for it to be a healing for the person in spirit, not just for your sitter. That's how mediumship is changing. Mediumship is a living, breathing thing, and it's in transition now. It's been sitter-based for the last 60 years, and it's starting to become a little bit more spirit-based. So it means it's not going to be just about your sitter, but it's also going to be a chance for the person in healing to evolve a little more too.
Well, I had a troubled relationship with my own father in this physical experience, and I've had readings where he has come through and said, don't stop what you're doing because I'm growing and healing and learning from you as this goes on, which is very comforting to me.
Yeah, and what the fact that he said to you, don't stop, means I'm proud of you. Look at what you're doing. You know, we know. You know, the interesting thing that they'll show me is that they're on the other side and they're with a group of friends, and what they're talking about is you. And you think they're not interested in you anymore, and they're bragging about you to their friends there.
Oh, that's cool.
That's what it's like. The same way they would have talked about you here, that's the way they talk about you there.
Oh, that's
they're much kinder.
Well, he's, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Jake, with all of this, you've got to have a terrific tip for finding joy in life. What is yours?
Get out of your own way. Stop overthinking. We tend to overthink in this world. You know, it's about getting grounded. If the one gift you can give yourself, and you can do it anywhere, anytime, is to learn how to do basic meditation. You don't have to become a yogi and sit with your feet crossed anywhere. There's a fabulous one on YouTube called Eternal Om by Robert Slapp. Like somebody smacking you, Robert Slapp, the extended version. It's an automatic meditation. It doesn't matter whether you are in the mood for it or not, or you're cooperating. You're going to meditate if you listen to this, especially if you listen to it with a headset on and on low volume. All it is monks chanting Om over each other. But there was something about the way this was produced that it takes you through the brain waves in the right cycle at the right point that you automatically get into a meditative
state. That's a whole CD, isn't it?
There is a whole CD.
I have it. I do believe I have it. Eternal.
Listen to it then.
Yeah. Do I have to listen to it through headphones or?
Don't have to. I do because what I've actually done to help me, because my focus has to go in a different way when I go into an altered state, is that I use noise canceling headphones. So I'm really hyper-focused on it. One of the things I did years ago, I don't know where you're at as far as time, but one of the things that I did years ago was I would sit for hours trying to heighten certain sensitivities. And I got to the point where I could look at a tree and it would be 30 or 40 feet away and it would come right up to me and be 2 feet away and I could see every grain in the wood and the bark and everything. And I got to where I would close my eyes and move my head like an antenna, and I could pick up a conversation a block and a half away at a bus stop. I could pick up birds singing three blocks away.
Wow.
I worked, but I did that for hours on end to try and make it stronger so that when I am open to the spirit, if they're struggling, I can still pick up a little bit more than most people only because I put the time into it.
Well, sure. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it doesn't mean there's anything special about me. It's not about me. It's about me wanting to be the best I can be for you.
Right. But in a way, that is about you. That's why you're such a beloved medium, because, and so compassionate, because you really are putting that extra part of you, that extra piece into it, which is wonderful.
You have to constantly work at this. This is not something you learn and then you just do it.
Right.
I'm constantly reading, before I ever charged anybody a nickel for a reading, I was 30 grand in on workshops and classes and all kinds of stuff.
So admirable, Jake.
If anybody ever knocks, they say, well, why are you charging $150 for a reading? Well, you know what? I'm entitled to eat. I'm entitled to pay my mortgage. I have kids, all that stuff. So I have a life. And I've worked for it.
And you've worked very hard to be the best that you can be at what you do.
I try to do the best I can every single time. I really try to create I have a level of integrity that I try to hold on to, and the consistency is there. And I think that's one of the things is what brings people back, is that I am fairly consistent compared to a lot of other people.
By the way, when I read your book, Gatekeeper of the Invisible Door, your integrity jumped right out at me. I knew immediately that was a very special part of you, because not everyone has that. And it's really important to make sure that you find people who have integrity. And with that, Jake, I have to say that I so admire your humility and sincerity and kindness as you continue to make a profound difference in people's lives by lightening the load of pain they bear from losing their loved ones. My heartfelt thanks for all that you do to help people heal through your books, your remarkable readings, your inspiring public appearances, your workshops, and so much more, including this wonderful interview on Grief and Rebirth podcast today. And in the spirit of lightening the load of pain by learning about healing choices and becoming inspired, here's a reminder, everyone, that you can see the full show notes and all Grief and Rebirth podcast episodes on ireneweinberg.com, and make sure to follow us and like us on social at Irene S. Weinberg on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Thanks again for joining us. And as I like to say, to be continued, many blessings and bye for now.
Thank you, Irene. I really appreciate the opportunity to meet you today. I feel like I've made a friend, and I feel blessed to know you. And I'll say it just right out front. I love you. You're awesome.
Much love with you too, Jake. This is wonderful.
Thank you, sweetie. Be well. Okay.